All right, welcome in. Good afternoon. It is another edition of Sports Talk Live here out at the District West, 3233 North Mesa. And you heard from Sal Montes. He is back at our River Oaks Property Schoolyard Sports Studio. But we are out here at the District West, 3233 North Mesa, getting ready for some basketball. That's right. It is senior night out at the Don Haskins Center. The UTEP basketball team hosting Florida International. It's the last time you'll get a chance to see in person at the Haskins Center guys like Zid Powell, Calvin Solomon, Tay Hardy, John DeSanjos. It's all happening tonight out at the Haskins Center. If you're anywhere in the area today, plan on stopping by out here at the district. We have happy hour specials going on right now. In fact, $2.75 on domestics, $3.75 on Wells, $4 Ornitos, $4 Fireball, and it's all happening here at the District West. If you're not a drinker, don't worry. I'm not going to be drinking tonight. I'm going to be feasting on the $8 wraps. That's right. They've got steak. They also have a chicken option as well. You can get it with a basket of fries to go along with the wrap. And it's super filling, just $8. And it's all out here at the District West, 3233 North Mesa. So plan on heading down here and joining us for Sports Talk Live. We've got a lot of great giveaways here. We've got some sunglasses thanks to the Oscar ID at the agency. We've got KLAQ koozies. We've got Minor Talk stickers thanks to Lost in El Paso. Really appreciate them and the great people out there who do a great job of printing our shirts and printing our stickers. Those are all just giveaways that we're having here at the District West. We have a limited number of tickets, so if you get out here early, you can take advantage of picking up some of these tickets for UTEP basketball tonight as they take on Florida International. And if you're in the area, you could also ask for some of the other goodies that we've got. We've got Horizon Golf passes. We also have other tickets to places like Monkey Rock here in town. So if you're anywhere in the area, if you want to pick up some great prizes, you want to have a great bite to eat, you want to watch some college basketball and some NBA action before you get out to senior night, join us here. The District West, 3233 North Mesa, is where we are getting things started. Back out to Sal Montes. He's in our River Oaks Property Schoolyard Sports Studio, like I mentioned earlier. Sal, tonight is senior night. We're going to have an entire show to talk about some of these seniors and their performances. I did some homework before this one, so I've got some good stats to throw at you as well, as always. But it's senior night, and for the minors, you control your own destiny. You got to win tonight and put yourself in a good position going into the conference tournament, because you didn't see it happening. I didn't see it happening. No one on this radio station saw the sweep by the minors that happened last weekend, and it was a win at Jacksonville State a week ago from today. And it was a win at Liberty a week ago on Saturday. And, for a road sweep like the Miners did, coming home for senior night, just handle business, take care of it, and beat Florida International.
Yeah, and they've been handling business basically since last Thursday and playing really effective when it comes to being efficient, taking care of the ball as well. So the best part is they get another chance to do it. And if you're a basketball team in Conference USA, no matter who you are, you want to be playing your best basketball going into the tournament, as we all know what's going to happen when Conference USA comes selection time. So for the Miners, this is completely different territory, so to speak. Now they got to handle it at home, and history's on their side. Adrian, undefeated since 2020 in senior games at the Haskins Center. So let's see if they can keep that up.
I like it. Great stat to throw out there to get things started here. I love it, Sal. And tonight we've got a big one. It is, of course, UTEP taking on Florida International. The women's basketball team wrapping up their road schedule. Like you mentioned in SportsCenter, Sal, they've got Florida International on the road. So that's something else to mention. And then all the other big storylines today across sports. There's a lot of good ones. Let's get to all the headlines here before we get to our first break. It's actually the Bears who've been, making a lot of headlines so far, and it's what they did today in locking in and securing one of their top players overall. This is their star cornerback who got a $76 million deal. Jalen Johnson, who's been a star early on into his career, he's guaranteed $43.8 million at signing. He'll make $28 million in the first year of his deal, so Chicago Bears locking down one of their top players. I was surprised to see Jonnu Smith sign with the Dolphins. Dolphins. Although, you know, Mike Gesicki, he killed it last year with the Dolphins. So I think they're just trying to address that position and add more pieces to that spot right now. If you're a New Orleans Saints fan, you're excited about the news that veteran safety Tyrann Mathieu is coming back. A two-year extension. The veteran safety is coming back with the Saints. His new deal is worth a total of $13 million. He was entering the last year of his deal, and then he was originally owed $9 million in salary. So now they get to spread it out. He gets a little bit of security knowing that he gets a two-year extension and stays with the team that really means a lot to him. But the biggest news today out of the NFL that I was really surprised about, the fact that the Broncos, they actually released Justin Simmons today. He was their third-round choice in the 2016 draft. He will immediately catapult as one of the top free agent guys here once free agency kicks off next week. And as far as a defensive acquisition, probably 31 teams are lining up right now trying to ask, what does it cost to bring in Justin Simmons? And it's just going to be a bidding war to try to get somebody like him on their team. Most interceptions since 2016, Justin Simmons with 30, Xavien Howard 29, Kevin Byard 28, and J.C. Jackson with 26. He leads all players right now in the NFL with most interceptions since 2016. He's just a game changer. He flips the field for you as a defense, and yeah, man, this is a shocking one right here. Although I guess if you're looking at it right now, Broncos are hitting a big reset. They want it to be Sean Payton's team, despite him not necessarily being the GM. He's going to make up that entire roster, and he's going to get guys who he believes that can win. And you know what? Maybe they saw Simmons right now as an expensive figure, even though he's a winning player. So that's kind of the, you know, early headlines here that we see today, starting off Sports Talk out of the NFL. Sal, I got to get your thoughts on this one, because out of the boxing world, this one's coming up in a big way.
Yeah.
Jake Paul taking on Mike Tyson. This is insane. What were your reactions to hearing the news of Jake Paul versus Mike Tyson July 20th of this year on Netflix?
I had to do a double take, because I'm like, Tyson, did I hear Tyson correctly? And then I heard it again, and I'm like, maybe they mean a Tyson Fury's brother. You know, that's what I thought originally, but
right?
I don't know. It's showtime, man. That's all it is. It's all about getting people interested, and you got to think outside the box and into the ring, I guess, if you want to throw all these analogies in there. But I don't know what to make of it, man, because it's not the same no more. You know what I mean? If you would have told me maybe 10 years ago, all right, Jake Paul is going to get worked. And don't get me wrong, Mike Tyson is he's my favorite boxer of all time, but the guy's up there in age, man. Who knows what's going to happen? Maybe they do a fake handshake and you know, just scam the people out of their money. I hope that's the case, because I can't live with seeing Mike Tyson fight at age 55, man.
Man, yeah, that's kind of ridiculous to me, Sal.
Is
I mean, all right, look. So,
yeah, right?
I think it's 58. So Mike Tyson's going to be 58 when he gets out in this boxing bout.
Wow.
He'll be, and then Jake Paul will be 27. So I don't even like this topic, just to be honest with you. I don't really like the conversations around Jake Paul. I'm not a huge fan of his. I just don't like the whole, you know, I get it. You know, I appreciate the fact that he's climbing up and has grown significantly as a boxer over the years. So I appreciate that, right? I'm just not going to be the one who's going to clear my Saturday night to watch Jake Paul fight guys like Nate Diaz, guys like Anderson Silva, guys like Tyron Woodley. I don't really care, you know, to be honest with you. He's beat these former UFC stars in the past. And Jake Paul, you know, he turned pro after just 4 years ago. He's coming off back-to-back first-round knockouts of guys like Andre August, Ryan Berland. These are all recent fights that he's had on his side. So he's not only beaten some of the big names out of the UFC, but he's beaten also names who you know, he has to take on as he continues his pro boxing career. So I can appreciate his growth through this, which initially I thought it was just a stunt. I thought it was just part of his YouTube and social media craze. That's what I thought it was. And just a money ploy.
Same.
And now, yeah, and Sal, for somebody like Paul, for me, it's just hard to root for. Are you somebody who clears your Saturday night to watch some Jake Paul action?
No, and I don't think I ever will be. It's nothing against him. I got other things to do, man. I'd rather would load up the Xbox, you know, with with some food and stuff. But yeah, man, it's crazy. It kind of feels like originally to me, it felt like a joke. It felt like a popularity contest, and he was able to succeed and, you know, gain more clout that way. But over the years, I'm not going to lie, he's looked pretty good from the highlights that I've seen. He's been able to land some shots, but at the same time, too, it's not the real deal. You know what I mean? And no pun intended on Holyfield, but it's not the real deal at all. I don't look at this the same way that I look at actual professional boxing. And people can say, well, Mike Tyson used to be one of those guys. You're right, he used to be, but it's 2024 now. Times are a lot different. It's just not the same, and I don't know. Boxing in general doesn't appeal to me the same way it did 5 years ago, which we can even argue boxing 5 years ago is not the same as boxing 10 years before that. You know what I mean? And that just adds to my point. I have no interest in it whatsoever. And I don't know why Mike Tyson is doing this. Maybe there's, you know, some gain for him financial, like a really, really great financial gain. But I was taught, Adrian, When you're done using the toilet, you flush it. You don't play with it. I don't know why he's playing around with it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you on that completely, Sal. And I do think it's a money ploy. But when I say all this, okay, and I agree with you on everything that you said about boxing, you know what I do love to consume right now? Like, as age 27, you know, when I'm on Twitter, when I'm on Instagram, whatever, I love to consume the old Mike Tyson clips. Like, yes. He's one of the greatest and most fearsome heavyweight boxers to ever exist. And he's somebody who's just a fantastic boxer. You know, who's somebody who's just a standout. And you think about Jake Paul. He's somebody who's just a standout fighter in himself. He's going to be 27 at the time. I just can't believe this fight is actually going on.
How did they make this happen? That's what I want to know. There have been other fights that I'll say rumored. And when I say rumored, I mean Twitter or X, formerly known as Twitter, and social media in general. You know, they were just throwing random names out there 3 years ago or so. And nobody ever thought, you know, you fast forward into 2024. Who would have thought that Mike Tyson and Paul would actually get in the ring together? It's like barbershop talk that's left the barbershop and is actually happening in the middle of the street.
No, you're totally right there, Sal. And I'll be honest with you. I just think about Mike Tyson. The fact that he's going to be at AT&T Stadium, for a lot of people here in El Paso, they're big Mike Tyson fans. Oh, yeah. They have more stories about Mike Tyson than we do right here. And I'll tell you, as far as Mike Tyson goes, July 20th, AT&T Stadium, for people in El Paso to make an excuse and to drive 10 hours east to go watch Mike Tyson fight, I think they'd be all for it. You know, I think there'd be a lot of people who'd be on the train to go out and actually watch this fight. And I don't blame them, to be honest with you. If you're a huge Mike Tyson fan, you're of course going to go out and do something like that. And yeah. I think there are a lot of big Mike Tyson fans across the city of El Paso.
Yeah, and you pair that in, Adrian, I'm going to cross it over a little bit, but you pair it in with football, and how many fans of Mike Tyson are also Dallas Cowboys fans here in El Paso? They're not just going to go for Mike Tyson as well. I mean, let's say it was in Houston or something. All right, they might make the trip, but now it's kind of like that added benefit, right? Hey, go see Mike Tyson, maybe do a tour of the stadium, whatever the case is, you know, shop around, get memorabilia of Dallas Cowboys. So it's going to be a fun time if they decide to go.
Yeah, I think so too. And I'll tell you this. I mean, it'll be entertaining for sure, especially AT&T Stadium, the fact that it's going to be out there. Yeah, it'll be entertaining, no doubt about it. I'll tell you one other thing about this one, and then we'll take a break right here, and then we'll get out to our upcoming guest, which I'm really excited about. He's somebody who was the undisputed heavyweight champion from 1987 to 1990. There's a good chance that El Pasoans have seen him actually fight in the past or have never seen him fight, but he's like one of their favorites. So now that they're older, they can actually make out the trip and do this. But is there anybody out there who's a fan or not a fan of Mike Tyson? Is there people out there who want to see this fight? If you're out there right now, we'd love to hear from you at 600 ESPN El Paso or on Twitter and X. Just let us know. Are you anticipating this fight in a positive way? Do you want to see Mike Tyson at age 58 go back in the ring against a 27-year-old? I don't care if he's inexperienced. I don't care if he lacks the actual boxing edge that you need to win these fights? I don't care about any of that stuff. Do you just want to see Mike Tyson, age 58, back in the ring, period? We'd love to know, and we'd love to hear your thoughts. 915-505-6009. Also at 600 ESPN El Paso on Twitter and X. Speaking of combat sports, we're going to shift it up. We're going to talk some UFC 299. That is right. One of our favorites. He's a third-time member here on Sports Talk. He's joined us three times already, and it's Gilbert Burns out of the welterweight division. He's a huge name out of the UFC, and he's got a huge fight this weekend against JDM, and this one is part of UFC 299, the pay-per-view that will be on ESPN Plus, so you can actually download and subscribe to ESPN Plus to get the fight. That's UFC 299, or you can join us here at the District West, 3233 North Mesa, for the UFC bout. They're going to actually show it. No cover fee will be included, and it's the big O'Malley versus Vera. It's two. It's the rematch, and it's on ESPN Plus coming up this Saturday. That's all coming up here after Charlie won, and after we hit this break, you'll hear from Gilbert Burns from UFC 299, which is coming up this weekend. Just getting started out here at the District West. If you plan to go out to the game tonight, consider stopping by, having a bite to eat, get a drink, and join us here for Sports Talk Live as we get you ready for UTEP versus FIU. Coming back with Gilbert Burns right here on 600 ESPN El Paso.
600 ESPN El Paso.
Back here on Sports Talk, live at the District West, 3233 North Mesa is where you can find us ahead of UTEP basketball. Today they are taking on Florida International for their senior day, but now let's shift it up, let's switch gears, and let's talk a little UFC 299. One of the big bouts is part of the main event. It's going to be Jack Della Maddalena taking on Gilbert Burns in the welterweight division, and we've got on our Longhorn Distributing hotline right now Gilbert Burns himself. He's joined us previously last year to talk about some of the fights that he's been a part of, and now he joins us again to start off here our 4 o'clock hour. Gilbert, thank you so much for joining us here this afternoon. Really appreciate it. UFC 299 right around the corner, but before we talk about this weekend's fight, last year you went on a ridiculous three-fight tear where you fought three different fighters in less than 5 months. And you fought in January, you fought in March, and then you wrapped it up with a bout in May in which you really injured your shoulder in that one. But you were climbing up the ranks as far as the welterweight division and really showing what you could do all of last year. I thought you were really at the peak of your powers. But you tell me, what do fans expect from Gilbert Burns in 2020? Could we see you go on a ridiculous three-fight and five-month stretch here this year? Or are you going to dial it back here a little bit this year?
Not as crazy. You see, I just want to be super active and become a champion. That's my goal. But I think three fights in less than 5 months, one of these fights being five-round fight, that's why I got the injury on my shoulder. I was pushing so much, too much, way too much, too fast to become a champion. But everything, you got to go on your own time. So you got to be a little bit smart. We taking the fights, the criteria, respecting the training camp of my body and everything, the rest. But still planning on be a busy year, get a couple great fights and become a champion. That's the goal.
I hear you. Gilbert, when it comes to just your streak last year, is this something that you kind of had to hone in on after the injury that you faced against Bilal Muhammad? You kind of looked inward and said, hey, look, I wanted to push myself to the highest levels and I want to become a champion so bad, but I also have to understand my own body's limitations.
Well, yeah, 100% I do. That was the learning process, pursuing something, pursuing a goal and putting everything on it, but not pushing, got to respect the process. So yeah, that was the learning process of pursue, be 100% on goal, but we cannot kill the body. We cannot do three-way cuts like that. I cannot do a training camp after training camp after training camp without rest, So, and then I paid that in full. And at the end of the day, it was a, was a good time to stay with the family, to recompose, to refocus, to stay with the family, to get spiritually, mentally, physically strong again, to go back to that goal to that he's becoming the champion.
It's interesting, right? Because you take this time off, and you know, for other fighters, it's just a regular break between fights. But for you, you're so active and you fight so much that fans just love whenever they get a chance to see you step in the octagon. But my question is, you know, when you have that time to kind of refocus, hone in on your craft, and to get geared back up, do you reflect back on last year and realize that, man, you were on a really nice tear as you're kind of growing as a fighter and you're continuing in your career? You were at some of the peak of your powers last year. Did you kind of feel that way?
100%. And I'm still doing that. It's like 10 years in the UFC maximum. I got, that's going to be my fight number 22nd in the UFC. So yeah, I like to say that I'm happy with my career so far, but I still have so much more to accomplish. And now with the refocus, with the good training camp, with the family support, spiritually on a great place, yes, now I think I'm on my way to do an even better thing that I have done already.
Hey, this one's going to be in Miami this weekend. I'm talking about UFC 299. It's exciting because you've had some really good showings in the state of Florida and in Miami. So when you look at your opponent in JDM, he's somebody who's really trending upward right now and has been on a nice little streak. However, he has some vulnerabilities. What are you kind of looking as far as his weaknesses go for Saturday's fight and what you're trying to expose in this welterweight bout?
His weakness is my strength, you know, and I'm planning on fighting my strength and his weakness. So making it sound easier for whoever's listening, we're going to grapple. So I'm planning on putting my hands on this guy and then show him levels, you know, put this guy down, grapple, and end up putting this guy in very bad positions and finishing. That's the goal, you know. So, and like I said, I'm number 4 ranking in the world right now. Looking forward to get this title as soon as it happens, you know, not as soon as I can. Otherwise, I'm going to do the mistake that I did last year again. But I go out there and I got to destroy this guy, you know, and then we'll see what's going to be next. But the goal is to go out there and fight on this guy's weakness and fight where I'm the best at.
Gilbert Burns joining us right now on our Longhorn Distributing Hotline as we continue ahead of UFC 299. O'Malley versus Vera 2 is the headliner, but this one's a huge one, the welterweight bout here that we're talking about right now. Gilbert, when you reflected back on last year and the run that you went on and just kind of the experience that you gained of beating Jorge Masvidal, beating Mangi early January of last year, that was a choke submission. The Masvidal bout was a unanimous decision. Do you look back on those and kind of think, man, I was just really killing it there, even against Bilal Muhammad. Had you not gotten injured, you probably go through him, and you have a really nice resume in that welterweight bout to earn a title fight. But do you reflect back on last year and say, what if, or do you kind of use last year to propel you moving forward, thinking, no, I'm not going to live in the what if. I'm going to live in the future, and I control my own destiny.
It's not what if. I don't do the what if anymore, you know. what if it doesn't exist, you know, and I don't want to make that. So we're going to live in the fact. I lost the fight. No what if, you know, it happens already. It's a fact. So my mentality was, okay, I pushed the process. I lost. I got hurt. So what I have to do now? So we got back to the doctor. He said it was going to be a slow process. And then I'm just like, I like to get things done. So when we got there and they said, okay, it's a surgery case, but we could avoid. So let's try stem cells for a month. Let's see how it goes. Don't do anything. Don't run. Don't exercise. Come back here. We're going to see it. And after 1 month, I went back. And then shoulder was getting better. We did another stem cell shot. Wait another month. And then when I was back after 2 months without doing anything, the shoulder started healing, and then we started the physical therapy slowly. So I got clear to get back on the mats only by November. Before that, we were just doing PT, cardio, lifting. But I was clear to come back in November to full training. And then I was so thirsty to come back that I was so hungry that whenever that first November was great, then December was great. End of December, they already we were talking about fighting. They said, Jack, and they said, okay, let's do it. So the way I think is no what if, is no excuse. What do I have to do? And then I called the UFC and said, oh, you need 1 or 2 weeks to get back on the title contention to get another title shot. Let's do it. They sent me the name. It was Jack Della Maddalena on it. I said yes, and we're here.
That's awesome. I love how this all came together. Now, as far as this camp goes, how different is it than previous camps? I know for you, Miami is a little special in your heart. I alluded to this earlier, but you beat Jorge Masvidal almost a calendar year ago in Miami for UFC 287. So being back on 299 in Miami, it must be special for you and the fans.
For sure, it's special. Been living here. September is going to turn 11 years that I'm living here. I love out of here, you know, families coming, friends, Brazilian community, teammates. Yeah, it's gonna be special. It's gonna be exciting. And then that just put a fire on me and lit me up on the training camp. I don't want to lose ever, especially at home, especially for these guys. So I put in a crazy model work. I have a lot of teammates with big fights coming up. We all getting ready. It was even harder camp because all my teammates, they have a fight coming up. They fought or they will fight. And everybody was in a good shape. So it was a very hard training camp. But I made it. I'm ready. We're here. You're going to do a press conference in a little bit. Today we saw the weight cut. Tomorrow we make the weight. And Saturday is going to be a good night here in Casilla. Miami.
You know, the welterweight class is in a weird position right now. There's another match, in this one in 299. It's Kevin Holland, Michael Page. But just period. I mean, welterweight, the division has been in a weird position. I'm curious to see if Leon Edwards is going to fight in 301 or if that's going to happen or when he's going to fight next, because I want to see you get an opportunity if you continue to climb up the ladder to get that shot at the title fight.
I will. You know, it's a matter of time right now. I think 301 is going to be in Brazil. I don't think Leon's going to fight there. But I hope 302, if they get the Bilal Muhammad and Leon fight out of the way, you know, we need it. That belt needs to keep rolling. And then by then, I believe I'm going to do my homework and I'll put myself in the position to get this title, next title shot and eventually get this title.
Could we see you fight at 301 since it's in your home country of Brazil?
Maybe. Depends how it goes Saturday night. Like I said, I got to respect my body. I got to celebrate. I got to rest. Then I got to go back into the training camp. If everything goes good and they have a good name for me in Brazil, everything goes my way, I get no injuries, I get beautiful perform, and they get a good name for me in Rio. Why not? We'll see.
Okay, I like it. Gilbert, thank you so much for all the great time today. I'll end with this question. It seems like last year, and we talked a lot about 2023, again, three fights in less than 5 months, which was just a crazy tear in itself. Before the fight against Bilal Muhammad, I felt like fans were really excited to see you at that time, and there wasn't necessarily that fatigue. You know, you see some fighters fight, frequently or whatever it might be. There's some fatigue on them, and the fans don't like to respond to those guys necessarily, but it seems like you've become and grown into such a fan favorite among the UFC, which is a really cool thing to say. What would you like to say to the El Paso and all the Texas fans who have followed your story and who continue to support you as a fighter?
I just a shout out. Thank you guys so much, everyone in El Paso, Texas. I hope to go there. I hope to fight that one day. But yeah, appreciate you guys. Make sure you guys tune in Saturday night. Pay-per-view is going to be a good night. I'm going to put on a show. Make sure you don't miss it.
Awesome stuff. Gilbert, thank you again, and best of luck on Saturday.
Thank you, brother. Have a good one.
He's Gilbert Burns, and he's fighting Jack Della Maddalena on Saturday. It's part of UFC 299 in the welterweight division, and that is coming up here on ESPN+. By the way, want to thank again ESPN+ for arranging this interview. If you want to watch O'Malley versus Vera 2, it's UFC 299, and it is available via pay-per-view on ESPN+. Or you could watch it out here at the District West, 3233 North Mesa. They'll have the big fight coming up this weekend, free of charge. And by the way, they don't have a door fee or a cover fee or anything like that when you watch any kind of pay-per-view here at the District West. They've also got two other locations, one off Piedras and one off Airway. That is the District Pub and Kitchen that has all of UFC and pay-per-view watching at their locations. Hey, we've got happy hour specials happening here at the District until 6 o'clock. I'm talking about $2.75 on domestics, $3.75 on Wells, $4 Ornitos, $4 Crown, and that is all happening here at the District West. We are getting ready for the big one. UTEP's taking on Florida International. We'll continue to preview this matchup, and we'll give you more of sports talk here coming up in just a little bit. Less than 30 minutes away from Track Talk, that is coming up at the top of our second hour, and then our third and final hour, we will hear from Locomotive FC head coach and technical director Brian Klarhot. He will join us live in person here at the District. So if you're anywhere in the area, come on by, stop by, say hi, grab a bite to eat, take advantage of the great $8 wraps. We love them. Steak, chicken, or just get the cheese. That is the $8 wrap special they have every Thursday here at the District, and it comes with fries as well. Coming back with more as we continue here on Sports Talk in 600 ESPN El Paso. Welcome back. Sports Talk continues. We are live here out at the District West, 3233 North Mesa, ahead of UTEP basketball tonight. They're taking on Florida International, and it's senior night. So if you are anywhere in the area, you plan to go on the big game tonight, come on out and join us here at the District West, 3233 North Mesa. Oh, man, I just can't thank Gilbert Burns for running it back and doing it with us again. He was fantastic. What a great guest. I think UFC 299 is going to be fantastic. Between the O'Malley Verify. I mean, I've just been waiting for O'Malley to fight, Sean O'Malley to fight for a while now. And the fact that he's fighting Chito Vera, the only guy who's beat him thus far, is going to be great. This is out of the bantamweight main event title fight. I can't wait for this matchup. It's going to be a great bout. The Gilbert Burns JDM fight is going to be fantastic as well because, you know, Gilbert Burns fighting, again, three times in 5 months, less than 5 months, really incredible. And then Della Maddalena, he's won 16 in a row, which is a crazy run out of the UFC in the welterweight division. So it's going to be a great one. I can't wait for it. It's happening Saturday, and it's on ESPN+. If you don't have the pay-per-view, you can come on out here at any of the District Pub and Kitchen locations, and you can actually watch it with no cover fee. That is all the District locations, one off Airway, one off Piedras, and here by the University off Mesa. And we are here until the Countdown to Tip-Off show at 6:30. We're going to have Track Talk right around the corner. Augustine, he's checking in on social media, Twitter and X. Good to see Augustine checking in, Sal. Feels like we haven't heard from Augustine in a while. We've had less trolls here on this show because of it.
Yeah, and he even called during the break to give some thoughts. So no, he's awesome, man. You gotta love the resurgence of Augustine. It's March Madness, and people are gonna get mad when they hear him. He delivers in March Madness.
Oh my goodness,
that's my guy.
Yeah, he does. He definitely delivers the March Madness. I love that, Sal. Hey, let's talk a little Senior Night. This is one for the Miners where they've got to win, and I expect them to win. I think UTEP's gonna do a good job tonight of getting it done. And look, Florida International hasn't necessarily been the best team whatsoever. I mean, they've struggled all season long. And you know, when you look at this UTEP team right here, it's not like they've been necessarily super successful this season. However, I'll say this, the fact that they won back-to-back on the road, something that we counted them out on, something that a lot of people in this town counted them out to do this whole year, I think they've got a little chip on their shoulder. So for this UTEP team right now, they're 15-15, 6-9 overall in conference play, and they've host Florida International tonight. I expect them to get it done. Sal, I think this is the game where UTEP, you just expect them to do the right thing, and that's get it done at home against Florida International, on paper an inferior opponent over the Miners.
And a revenge game too, Adrian. They really let right. that one slip out in Miami. So I'm pretty sure they have that ingrained in their heads. And there's been a lot of games that went down like that too. Not necessarily blowing the big lead, but not playing well at all in the under eight. And you know, you kind of saw the first glimpse of that for Conference USA when they did that. You got to see flashes of it in Sam Houston, where they just couldn't get it done and take care of business and play complementary basketball and let your defense complement your offense and vice versa. So they've done that well these last two games. Let's see if they can, one, carry that momentum into this one, but two, you know, get it back. They got to go into Conference USA playing good basketball. A loss tonight would definitely, I don't want to say completely derail them, but it does a lot more damage than it does be helpful.
Hey, when you look at Florida International, they're searching for their first conference road win of the season. They've got UTEP tonight, New Mexico State on Saturday. They just beat Western Kentucky. They've won two of their last three games. They also beat Liberty, just like the Miners did last week. And again, they beat Western Kentucky last Saturday, 85-83. So some quality wins as of late. I guess if you are a Florida International, you want to be playing your best basketball right here during this stretch of basketball. So let's go back out to our phone lines right now. 915-505-6009. That's our telephone number. Let's go out to Augustine, who is joining us this afternoon. Augustine, welcome aboard. It's great to hear from you.
Hey, let's welcome March Madness. And two things, Adrian. I got on the Jake Paul, Mike Tyson thing. What's the weight difference between Jake Paul and Mike Tyson?
Oh, that's a good question. I got to look up what Mike Tyson at age 58 weighs. I'll look. I'm sure it's easier to find the I see 240. I see 240 for Mike Tyson right here. For Jake Paul and his weight, this is a great question, Augustine. He fights at right now 200, sub 200. He was 199 in his recent fight, so he's 200. So 40-pound difference between Tyson and Paul, and that's a great point that you bring up.
And I'm saying that, one, because of the weight difference. And, you know, you don't really lose. Maybe you lose speed. Maybe you lose some agility with age. But you don't really lose punching power.
That's what I'm saying. So what if Tyson just humiliates him?
No, I mean, that's. I think that's what a lot of boxers want Mike Tyson to do. But if Mike Tyson lands one right, one punch at the right angle, I mean, you can say goodnight to Jake Paul easily.
Yeah.
Easily.
Yeah. I hear what you're saying, man.
I think it's more the anticipation of whether Mike Tyson will knock him out in the first or second round. And if now, what would you think, Sal? Because I know Sal hates Jake Paul. What would Sal think if Jake Paul actually goes the distance against Mike Tyson? Granted, a 58-year-old Mike Tyson, but Mike Tyson nonetheless.
It shouldn't happen in the first place, but we know it's going to go the distance, Augustine. It definitely is. It's all set up that way. They're more set up to go the distance than people believe Hollywood stage Taylor Swift to be in the Super Bowl with the Kansas City Chiefs.
Good stuff. Yeah. Hey, Augustine, I appreciate the phone call. I appreciate the thoughts. Thanks for bringing this up. And hey, you got a fan already on Twitter and X. It's Grand Paul at Paul Casadas. He says Augustine does not deserve the airtime. Oh man, Augustine already getting the March heat on the way back. Paul, there you go, Augustine.
Paul doesn't deserve another burger, but that's a different area.
Oh man, now we've got listeners going at it. Augustine, I appreciate the phone call, man. Thanks for weighing in on the show. 915-505-6009. In true Augustine fashion, he brings up one maybe good point and then he derails the conversation, but actually he brought up some good ones today, so good stuff. If I had to rate his call, which I've done in the past, it was a pretty good call there. I think he did a nice job. Maybe a 7 out of 10. Sal, what do you think? Something like that.
I would
maybe
say,
7 out of 10.
Yeah, 7 out of 10.
All right, good stuff. 915-505-6009. We're going to try to duck in one more phone call before we get out to Track Talk coming up later on tonight. That is Track Talk, and that is coming up here at the top of the 5 o'clock hour. In fact, you know, with Track Talk on the way and on the radar, we are also mentioning it's no Eric Alwyn today. Usually we have Eric Alwyn, the voice of Sunland Park Racetrack and Casino. Today will be Dustin Dix. He'll join us. He's the director of racing out at Sunland Park Racetrack and Casino. So that's all coming up here in our next hour. Let's get out to Enrique. He's joining us next on the phone lines. 915-505-6009. Enrique, good afternoon, man. What's going on?
Hey, what's going on, Adrian?
Oh, not much, Enrique.
I really like the heel heat from Augustine. The heel heat.
Oh, my gosh.
That heel promo. I liked it.
Yeah, good stuff. Good stuff. Enrique, what do you want? What's on your mind today?
So I was thinking about it when you brought up the Mike Tyson fight. Are they going to be padded like his last fight, or are they going to be, let's just go at it with these gloves? Because I'm thinking it's like that Rocky Balboa movie where he was retiring out of the ring and just facing that up and coming boxer.
I mean, do you consider Jake Paul up and coming? I guess 27 years old, prime of his physical age. It doesn't really matter who he's fighting, right? But it's,
well,
you know,
he's fighting a 58-year-old man. Like, if he loses the fight, it's kind of the same philosophy from the movie. If he wins the fight, who's gonna say, "Oh, you beat up an old man"? But if he loses the fight, an old man beat him up.
I just don't know why Mike Tyson's doing this, Enrique. Why do you think he's doing this?
It's Iron Mike, man. That's his ego. I love it. Hey, for him, keeping it in shape and being able to box at his age, almost 6 decades of life like that, that's something. And the way he tears it up in the gym and he gets in shape for his fight, it's another thing. It's like another animal.
Okay, so you'll be out there. You'll be out there at this one. Or at least watching it, Enrique, right?
Yeah, I'll be watching.
Awesome. Good stuff, man. Hey, I appreciate it, Enrique. Thanks for calling in. Thanks for giving your thoughts on the Mike Tyson bout against Jake Paul. I think it's pretty crazy in itself, but I appreciate it, man. Thanks for weighing in on the show. 915-505-6009. That's our telephone number. Taking a break right now. When we come back, we're going to get out to Track Talk. That's on deck coming up here on 600 ESPN El Paso.
600ESPNElPaso.com.
All right, it is time again for Track Talk here. Welcome back, everybody. Adrian Broaddus. We are live out at the District West, 3233 North Mesa, ahead of UTEP basketball tonight. They're taking on Florida International. Come on by if you're anywhere in the area on the west side. We're out at 3233 North Mesa near the university. It's time to hop back out to our Longhorn Distributing hotline and welcome on Dustin Dix here on the show to talk Track Talk. Sunland Park Racetrack has it. This weekend, a very busy weekend as always. Dustin, thanks so much for filling in for Eric here this week. Really appreciate you doing this one.
It's my pleasure, Adrian. Always good to talk horse racing.
Hey, Dustin, we got to recap what has been such a magnificent racing season out at Sunland Park Racetrack and Casino. In fact, you all have had some outstanding crowds all season long. February brought some great races. March is going to bring some great races as well. And it's all leading up to the conclusion, which is April 7th. But what have you noticed as far as some of the crowds and all the great people who've come out to watch these races?
Adrian, like you said, we've had some really strong crowds. We changed our format a little bit this year. We're running mainly thoroughbreds on Thursday and Friday, quarter horses on Saturday and Sunday, except the only exception, of course, was Sunland Derby Day, February 18th, and closing day, April 7th, as you mentioned. So we're very happy with the Sunland Derby crowd. We were worried moving it 5 weeks earlier, and we got the word out. Our marketing team did a great job of branding and messaging and getting the word out. And the crowd responded. We actually had a larger attendance this year versus last year, and we moved it up earlier. So we're very ecstatic about that. The main thing why I'm on here is just so everyone knows we're still running, because for some reason, when people think Sunland Derby, they think our season's over. We still have 5 more weeks of racing and go to April 7th. So a lot of big stakes coming up the last 5 weeks of our racing. A lot of good thoroughbred races as well. So a lot of good things to look forward to.
Dustin Dix is the director of racetrack operations at Sunland Park Racetrack, and he joins us here on our Longhorn Distributing Hotline as we get this started here today. Before we dive into what is ahead for this weekend, Dustin, I want to recap what happened last week. It was a big race for Sunland Park, and there was a lot of excitement around the West Texas Derby and the Sunburst Stakes. Can you recap what happened last week and just what you all saw out at Sunland Park?
Well, actually, Eric, our announcer, got sick right before the races, and I've been in horse racing for 30 years, and I've only announced one race, and I tried to announce the card on Saturday, and I announced a lot with numbers like Greyhounds announcers do, so it was a very humbling experience. So I think the world of Eric and what he does up there, because it's not hard to go up there, but horse by the name of One Little Liar won the West Texas Derby, trained by Andres Gonzalez. Very impressive from the inside. Was a great race. I think we had 9 horses in that race. And it's tough a lot of times for quarter horses to win on the inside. So it shows you the type of horse that One Little Liar is. And I think the Sunburst also was very competitive as well. Both those are quarter horse races. So had very strong crowds as well. And I think the key for us at Sunland Park is once football season is over, that's when the crowds really come out, and that's when we see the fans really support Sunland Park.
No doubt about it. You see what happened last weekend, and it translates into an exciting weekend here. And it starts tomorrow. It's the Albert and Henry Dominguez Memorial Handicap. This one is going to be exciting for a lot of different reasons. It's it's happening tomorrow, again, Friday, March 8th, out at Sunland Park Racetrack. This one should be a great one, Dustin.
It's a 1/16 race, Adrian, and we got a full field of 9. And the favorite in there is a horse called I'm a Gambler. The second horse favorite will be a horse named One Mark, trained by Todd Fincher. And for the racing fans out there that know, Todd won the richest race in the world a few weeks ago in Saudi Arabia, and talked to him this morning, and he's going to Dubai and going to run in the Dubai World Cup at the end of March. So very excited for him. He's in very high spirits, of course, with winning a race like that and getting to run for $12 million sounds like a lot of money, but he just ran for $20 million. So very happy for our local trainer, Todd Fincher, and Senior Buscador of horse actually won here last year. So it's amazing. That just kind of shows you the quality of horses we have, that a horse can come from running here in New Mexico at Sunland Park to going to winning the richest race in the world. That says a lot about the racing program here at Sunland Park.
Yeah, and it shows you the quality that's coming here all season long. You know, Dustin, what people don't realize is when they go out to Sunland Park and watch some of these higher stake races, they could end up seeing some horses that go off, like you mentioned, and win world championships, which is incredible right there.
Yeah, and we've seen horses run here that go into the Breeders' Cup. Of course, with the Sunland Derby and Sunland Oaks.
Of course.
Those horses will go to the Kentucky Derby, Kentucky Oaks, we're hoping. I believe the winner of the Sunland Derby this year, a horse named Stronghold, is pointing to running at the at Oaklawn in their Arkansas Derby April 7th. So be interesting to see how this horse runs. And if it even runs third or fourth, they'll have plenty of points to get into the Kentucky Derby. So that's the end goal for these horses. It's not necessarily the next race. It's the Kentucky Derby. That's what thoroughbred racing is all about. And that's the race that the world knows about. So we're very excited to see how that unfolds.
We'll get to the trials for the West Texas Futurity and the Spring Futurity coming up here next week. But before I ask you about that, I just want to ask you about some of the like the environment of going all weekend long. We just mentioned the big one that's happening this weekend, and it's the Albert and Henry Dominguez Memorial Handicap happening tomorrow. But if fans can't make it out tomorrow, Saturday, Sunday is filled with other races that people could stop by at Sunland Park Racetrack and just experience.
Yeah, we're running for over $200,000, I think, on Saturday and Sunday. Just shows you the high purses for these quarter horses, some very high allowance races, and very competitive this year. Horses have been winning. Quarter horses, a lot of times, they'll be horses will win on the outside. But what I've seen this year is our track's been very fair. We've seen horses win from the middle, the inside, the outside. Quarter horse racing is very exciting. That's what the region here likes. That's what the region knows. So it's been working out really well the way we broke out our thoroughbreds and quarter horses this meet. So we appreciate the local support we've got. We've expect good weather this weekend as well. So you'll see some high quality top allowance horses running Saturday and Sunday. And then next week, why it's so important, talk a little bit about the trials. These are two-year-old quarter horses. They've been practicing for this race. The top 10 qualifiers from Saturday will get into the finals on closing weekend and on Sunday for the closing weekend. And we have so many horses entering these races. I would expect us to run well over 9 races. I'm thinking we might run 12, 13, 14 races on at least one of these days. That just shows you the number of horses and future stars that these horses could go on to win not only the West Texas Futurity and the New Mexican Spring Futurity, but also go on to win some of the Triple Crown races at Rio Doso. So great kickoff that's what everyone's excited about on the quarter horse side. Then on the thoroughbred side, we have some really high-end stakes races on closing weekend as well with our Sunland Park Handicap. That's a $200,000 race. We have some of our three-year-old races as well. That'll be $125,000. So really great racing from now to April 7th.
You know, you mentioned that April 7th, Sunland Park Handicap. Is there any other dates? I mean, of course, we want fans to go out every weekend to Sunland Park Racetrack and Casino to watch some of these great races that happen weekly. But any other ones that fans who might need to, you know, actually mark off a day or like actually save a day that they need to be out there for a high quality race? Is there any other ones that kind of come to mind between now and April 7th that fans need to be aware of?
I think those trial days, not this weekend, but next weekend, St. Patrick's Day weekend, I think are huge because you'll see stuff. You'll see these horses run back again on April 6th. And sometimes you'll see things that the chart callers don't see. And you may get an edge on a horse that broke bad and still qualified for the finals, doesn't show up in the program. And you can make a lot of money by just being here, noticing things like that, and then capitalizing on April 6th for the finals. So I think that's a really cool thing is you're going to see some young horses running and then the top 10 qualifiers coming back on April 6th for both those races. So I think that's a really cool thing. And for those thoroughbred fans out there, Thursday and Friday, it's always good to come out on those days. And then closing day on April 7th, we have jam-packed stakes schedule for that day. So like you said, Adrian, we want you here every day, but if you're on a budget, maybe the trial weekend and closing weekend, maybe two times the point.
Most definitely. Dustin, you've been awesome. Again, Dustin Dix, he's the director of racetrack operations out at Sunland Park Racetrack and Casino. Dustin, thank you so much for joining us. My final question here, before we wrap things up here on this segment today, if there are listeners right now who've never actually been a part of the racetrack, can you just explain the environment that is around and how, you know, just to how you all welcome fans for the first time and how those fans can be included in all the excitement that happens at Sunland Park Racetrack?
Well, you know, that's the cool thing about horse racing, Adrian, is that you can have skin in the game. You like a horse, you bet it. And I've seen people win a lot of money. People that don't know anything about horse racing, it's kind of beginner's luck. You know, they bet their favorite name, their color, their house number, and win a lot of money. I've seen that. And how I got into horse racing, I won $4,000 when I was 19 years old on the Kentucky Derby. And then I dropped out of college. I don't recommend that for anyone. And I found out about a program at the University of Arizona, the Racetrack Industry Program. And that's kind of how I started my career, was just being a fan. And now look at me now, living my dream.
That's awesome. I love it. Living the dream out in Sunland Park Racetrack and Casino. I love it.
22 years here in the El Paso area at Sunland Park, and it's been great for me personally, and it's been great to be part of the success of Sunland Park.
Well, it's great to have you on the show today, and I appreciate all the insight. I'm excited for the busy weekend ahead, and thanks for subbing in here for Eric on Track Talk.
Thank you, Adrian, and we're wishing Eric a speedy recovery.
Us too. Hey, it's Dustin Dix joining us here on our Longhorn Distributing Hotline as we continue out here at the District West, 3233 North Mesa, if you're anywhere in the area. We're going to take a break right now. When we come back, more of sports talk as we continue. Let's go out to Charlie One. He has another traffic update as we continue. Charlie.
600ESPNElPaso.com.
All right, welcome back. We are on El Paso's west side, right by the university. It's the District West, 3233 North Mesa, as Sports Talk is continuing here into hour number two. Special thanks again to Dustin Dix from Sunland Park Racetrack and Casino. He was joining us to talk track talk, as we do each and every week here on Thursday afternoon. Special thanks to Pinky for stopping by. Special thanks to Gilbert for saying hello and hi. We've been handing out some of these great giveaways, like the Oscar Arrieta Agency sunglasses that are bright orange and getting you ready for the UTEP game. Also, we got some KLAQ koozies. We've got some Minor Talk stickers and plenty of giveaways here at the District West. We also have a pair of tickets. So if you're looking to go to the game tonight and you still need tickets for tonight, hit us up, 600 ESPN El Paso. We are live here at the District West, 3233 North Mesa. We also have some passes to Horizon Golf Course, and it's two green fees and a cart. It's an $80 value. Just stop by, say hi. You can pick one of these up. And, yeah, you can be on your way here on Sports Talk as we continue. Looks like Paul Casadas and Augustine are going at it right now. It is a social media battle. Grand Paul saying, hey, picking the low-lying fruit against Augustine. Again, for Augustine, someone lend him some money so he disappears from social media again. Hashtag deadbeat borrower. This is coming in from Augustine. He said, I say next time I come on the air, we play the Hunter Hearst H theme. And that is coming from Augustine. UTEP Zay in the house as we continue getting ready for senior night tonight. It's a big night for the Miners. Let's dive into the senior night game. What's up, Zay? Good to see you. Good to see you in person. We got some grub that we're going to eat out here at the District West, which I'm excited about. If anybody's in the area, want to also remind everybody about the $8 wraps that are going on right now on special. They come with some fries as well. It's a great meal. If you're out and about anywhere in the area, come on by. Have dinner with us here at the District West. We've got there's a lot of tables out here as well, and you could feast on some of the great food specials that they've got. They also have happy hour happening here all the way up until the top of the hour, till 6 o'clock, and that's when we will talk to John Berklow from the El Paso Locomotive FC, the head one of the assistant coaches, Brian Klauhut was unable to attend today, but instead we'll get the assistant coach for Locomotive FC. He'll be stopping stopping by in person as we continue. We're going to be feasting in just a bit, but the Miners, they're looking to feast tonight against Florida International, and they're also looking to honor four of their seniors. I'm talking about Zit Powell, Calvin Solomon, of course, Tay Hardy, and Jonathan DeSanjos. Let's talk about some of these seniors, guys, because it's senior night. It's a good time to talk about these players right here, highlight their accomplishments, their achievements, and everything they've done throughout their career. Let's start it off with Jonathan DeSanjos. How about that? He's somebody who came here as a junior college transfer. Prior to that, he played for Loyola Marymount. And so he's been around college basketball for a while, guys. And so I'll ask you, Sal, what's your Jonathan DeSanjos moment that stands out? Is it the UTSA game where he came off the bench, exploded for 10-plus points, and helped the Miners win on the road last year? Or is it the Middle Tennessee game that he had this year at home? He had an amazing performance against the Blue Raiders at home, that was in the overtime loss. That's the one that I'm talking about. And Jonathan DeSanjos, he exploded despite them losing that game in a double overtime effort. But you tell me, what is your, I guess, kind of highlight moment here for Jonathan DeSanjos, Sal?
If I have to pick a game, it would probably be that Middle Tennessee game. Recency bias is real. I'm not going to lie to you, but I think he provided a spark that they definitely needed. And if I could be, if I could give more of an honest opinion, it's not so much a game that I'll remember him for. It's more so kind of like the coming alive of DeSanjos, and it's kind of been that second half or final quarter of Conference USA is when he's been able to kind of fit in. And to no fault of his own, this guy's been hurt. He was hurt earlier this year, hurt a good portion last year. So we never really got to see the full effect of DeSanjos. But when he's on the floor, you could tell that once he gets a bit looser out there, there's a lot more fluidity in how the team plays. So I think a final quarter of the season guy for sure, someone who can provide some shots when UTEP can desperately, or not can desperately, they desperately do need them. So coming alive final quarter, that's my take from DeSanjos.
Yeah, I think for DeSanjos, he's proved, at least this year, that his perimeter game has stepped up. He's actually shooting the best of his career from beyond the arc, and that's 33% from beyond the arc. So I would say for, you know, Jonathan DeSanjos right now, he is somebody who provides help off the bench. Is he going to be a difference maker or game changer? I mean, he could be. But, Zay, DeSanjos, his entire career was riddled by injuries. Let's not bury the lead here, and let's be very clear with what happened with DeSanjos. He's had injuries throughout his entire UTEP run, and that's unfortunate. You wanted to see him healthy in a full extent of games, and I know that we've had listeners, whether it's on the Sports Talk or Minor Talk, knock Jonathan DeSanjos, but I always argue to them he never really got his fair chance, knowing that he's only played bits and pieces of seasons here and there. This season he was hurt, last season he got hurt 25 or whatever seconds into the game against Texas when he came off the bench in that game. So yeah, I just wish that Jonathan DeSanjos had a healthier career here at UTEP.
Yeah, you know, sports in general, it's just unfair sometimes, right? It was unfair to John DeSanjos during his time at UTEP. And, you know, I'll remember him, you know, first, I think he was the first, you know, commit under Joe Goldie, if I'm not mistaken.
That sounds right, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's a stretch four. He plays his role really well. And, you know, hopefully he can continue to find his footing down the stretch of this season, because, you know, we never really got to have that full Jonathan DeSanjos experience.
Right, and he could get hot in any game. That's one of the things that he provides. And Jonathan DeSanjos definitely going to be recognized tonight and honored here on senior night, and definitely deserves it. I mean, somebody who's gone through adversity but still fought through it and decided to play this year. You could say a lot about his passion, a lot about his heart to just be on the court here despite all the injuries that he's suffered throughout his career. Let's shift it over and let's talk about another player who's a little bit more polarizing. And you know what? We've been, we've held Calvin Solomon accountable all season long of just how he's had struggles this year. You know, he's accepted a totally different role. I guess that's the one thing you could say about Calvin Solomon. He's now playing as the center, whereas in his entire career, he's really been a true four. And this year, playing at that five position, it was tough. It was tough for him to start games. I mean, this year, you look at what Kevin Kalu has done at that position at the start. at the center position. The team will go with Kalu to start off. They'll sub Solomon right off the bench, throw him in the mix, and because of his athleticism and because of his defense, that's the way he's able to stay on the floor. The other side to it is he turns the ball over at a high rate, and that's unfortunate for him. He's actually turning the ball over at the highest rate of his career right now. This season, almost 30% of his own possessions have been turnovers, and for somebody like Calvin Solomon, I'm really hoping that he can turn things around here through the final stretch of the season. I'll say this, he played pretty well for the Miners off the bench in that Jacksonville State win on the road. He played better in that Liberty game, although he just had 2 points, 2 rebounds, 1 assist. The turnovers are just the ones that are going to kill you with Solomon. But guys, I mean, how do you assess his entire career? I mean, let's bring in Stephen F. Austin in the mix, because he was a productive player over at Stephen F. Austin before he transferred over to UTEP. This year, 5.9 points per game. Last year, 9.6 points per game. So he's taken a little bit of a dip in terms of production this year. Zay, you tell me, Calvin Solomon, how do we assess his entire career as a basketball player?
I mean, his entire career, it's been pretty good, right? You'll know Calvin Solomon for his, you know, he plays really good defense. He, at times, is a very energetic player, and his energy can be, you know, felt by the other players on the team, right? It could be infectious. So I'll always remember Calvin Solomon for, you know, his very he has a very interesting, you know, kind of gunslinger play style, right? If he's on the break,
right,
usually you're not going to see a guy 6'8 just running the break unless it's, you know, a guy like LeBron James. No, this is Calvin Solomon.
That's a good point.
He's going to either go up strong, a nice layup, a tough pass, or it's going to be a turnover. And, you know, you're just going to live with it because he does so much for the basketball team.
Sal, you tell me. We've watched Calvin Solomon for 2 years. He's going to be honored tonight for Senior Day. How will you remember Calvin Solomon?
I'll think of Solomon as a high-risk, high-reward type of player. Regardless,
that's a good description. I like it.
Regardless of how things have been faring these last, 4 or 5 weeks or so. But I think he's a guy who, well, when it's going, it's going. You know what I mean? And he fits perfectly. It's just at other times it tries to be too innovative and, stops the momentum with the turnovers. But I think he's a guy who's definitely going to be high energy, and you need him to be high energy to be effective. So that's what I'll think of. Just like an electrifier out there. He's either going to shock the opponent or he's going to shock himself.
I like it. I mean, the high risk, high reward description for Calvin Solomon is so interesting, right? Because I initially talked about him being a very polarizing figure on this basketball team. And just in terms of production, in terms of what he's done well throughout his career and some of the things he struggles at. And I like the high risk, high reward. You throw him on the floor, he could be your best defender in any given stretch, or he could turn the ball over and cause you some headaches. So I think that Solomon will be remembered as a spark plug. He brought a lot of energy to UTEP the entire time that he was here, and although there were some valleys, I think the peaks were worth it. I think UTEP ultimately got a winner when they got Calvin Solomon out of the transfer portal. Hey, we're continuing out here at the District West, 3233 North Mesa. We'll skip Sports Center here, Sal, at the bottom of the hour, and we'll continue profiling some of the seniors who are going to be honored tonight out for UTEP as far as senior night. All right, let's do this Sid Powell conversation, because I did some homework on this, and I think you guys are going to find this pretty interesting. UTEP grad transfers since 2014. I'll ask you guys just right off the bat, without even doing any research, Sal, you tell me, who do you think led the Miners as far in points per game? If you had to reflect back on graduate transfers in the past 10 years, who led the Miners in points among that group? Without me even giving you names, because this is just me putting you on the spot.
On the spot, oh, Matt, I can't remember if he was or not, but the one name that pops up, maybe Daryl Edwards.
Oh, man.
Was he
Let me just say this. You're right. You are right on this. Okay, I'm going to build this a little bit more.
Okay.
You are 100% right. I'll flip it to you, Zay. If you had to think of a player who averaged the second most points per game behind Daryl Edwards, which Sal was right, 2019-2020, Daryl Edwards leading UTEP in scoring that year, 12.5 points per game. Who was second, Zay, if you had to guess, 10 years back for graduate transfers for UTEP basketball?
Is it like a dramatic, like sharp, just from 12 all the way low, like a dramatic drop?
It's not a dramatic drop. Okay. Great question.
Man, I was ready for someone like Alfred Hollins to be that name, but I don't know. I have zero clue, honestly.
Okay, I'll give it to you. It's a three-way tie, basically, okay? It's between Zid Powell, who's averaging 10.9 points per game. I'll just round that up to 11, right? Shamar Givens from last year, he averaged 11 points. Keith Frazier, there's the throwback for you. Keith Frazier, Zay is so disappointed here. He's so disappointed that he didn't think of Keith Frazier. 2017-2018, 11 points per game for the Miners. Sal, would you have guessed any of those three, or would you have guessed somebody different?
I maybe would have guessed Shamar, but not the others.
That's a good one, right? I mean, I'll read all the numbers for you. Here's the graduate transfers, UTEP graduate transfers since 2014. There's only been five, by the way.
Okay.
It started off with Keith Frazier, North Texas. He came from North Texas. This was 2017-2018. He averaged 11 points per game. He also had 4.7 rebounds, 1.1 assists, no steals per game on 40% from the field. So he had a lot of shot attempts. But he was getting buckets that year, and although he had some problems, he had a bit of a polarizing career himself, Keith Frazier, he was somebody who was very productive for this UTEP basketball team that year. And Zay, that pretty much started things off as far as UTEP grabbing these graduate transfers. Keith Frazier really kicking things off in that category right there.
Yeah, you know, Keith Frazier, I just have so many fond memories of him. I know those years were probably ones to forget for minor fans, but I mean, those were my first years, you know, actually understanding what was going on, right? What was going on in the court. And I just remember Keith Frazier would pull some crazy shots, some deep, crazy shots, and he would hit them. I mean, he was a very polarizing player off the court. Obviously, he had his issues, but
right.
I mean, on the court, he was fun to watch.
He really was. Sal, I'll ask you this. The next name is Daryl Edwards, who was from LSU 2019-2020. He averaged 12.5 points per game, 2 assists, 2 rebounds on 44% shooting from the floor. Did we not take him at, you know, we maybe took him for granted. I'm just going to say it right now, Daryl Edwards, because he was a really productive player for the Miners.
Yeah, definitely took him for granted, and I think there were signs and flashes of excitement after the that Texas Tech scrimmage. Basically, everybody on that team was set to be a top 15 minor all time. Let's be real. After that game, we were so in and so high on this team. But no, I definitely think Daryl Edwards is one of the more, you know what, I don't want to say underappreciated. And the reason I say this is because he wasn't here long enough. Just in terms of a minor, he may be overlooked, but that's to no fault of his own. He was just here for a year. So that's what I think. I think if you could go back and watch every scoring leader as a graduate student or a senior from every year, you know, in minor history 1,000 times, then they'll have him at the top of the list. But other than that, he just wasn't here long enough. And I think that's why we tend to think he may have been, taken for granted. He really wasn't. People loved him when he was a minor.
Well, it's interesting you say that, right? Because Daryl Edwards, I mean, all these guys, right? Graduate transfers. How do you make an impact in 1 year where you actually have some kind of success, sustain that success, and then actually move forward with that player to actually, you know, have some kind of a stamp on the program? Most of these guys were not four-year guys at any college. So the fact that they came here to UTEP for their graduate transfer year, I mean, that's kind of unique in itself. I'm just going to read you the game log for Daryl Edwards and how he closed out his career at UTEP, okay? Against Charlotte on the road, 24 points. At Old Dominion, 16 points. 10 points in a home loss against Western Kentucky. 14 against Marshall in a home loss. Also, he dropped 34, 26, 25, and 22 in his last four games in conference play. He just went on a tear to close out the season. That's what I remember most about Daryl Edwards. And he was definitely one of the shining graduate transfers. Of course, Zid Powell is the one that I'm going to get to here in just a little bit. He's the graduate transfer from Buffalo who was on the minors this past year. But Alfred Hollins, we've talked about him and said his name here. This was the first graduate transfer to come in with Joe Golding. And for Joe Golding getting Alfred Hollins, this was a splash get. Somebody who has had played for Oregon State, had really, you know, played in the Pac-12 at a high level. And Alfred Hollins was going to be like the veteran guy in the room. And he really was that. Alfred Hollins was so likable by all his teammates. That was the same team that had Sule Boom, Jamal Bienemy, Keontae Kennedy, Titus Verhoeven, Christian Agnew, Jarrell Satterfield, Jamari Sibley. And Alfred Hollins is the old guy in the room on that first Joe Golding team, and they go 20-14. So despite Alfred Hollins averaging 4.9 points, 3 rebounds, and shooting almost 50% from the field, I felt like he made a big impact, Zay, than those numbers would indicate. He was kind of the glue guy that year for UTEP basketball.
Yeah, he definitely was, and he did a lot for the team. I mean, he's obviously on the smaller side for a big man. He was about 6'6", 6'7". But, I mean, you would see him guarding 1-5, getting, you know, tough rebounds, taking tough shots, and he really stretched the floor well. He was a really key piece to that team down the stretch, not only because of his, you know, veteran leadership off the court, but because of his, you know, versatility on the court, and that's what I'll remember him for.
I like it. Shamar Givens was somebody who came from Evansville, was supposed to be the immediate help that UTEP needed as a point guard. And you know what? To the credit of Shamar Givens, I thought the way he closed out last season was impressive. He finished out the year averaging 11 points, almost 4 rebounds, 4.4 assists, and then almost 2 steals on 42% shooting from the field. Shamar Givens, Sal, he never really, the one thing you can knock about him is he never really won at the places he was on, like, you know, Evansville, UTEP. He just never really had success on those teams as far as the teams actually having a winning record, but he's playing actually international basketball right now. He's playing basketball professionally. I believe it's the Turkish League, and I'm not surprised knowing that Shamar Givens, he's undersized, but he can legit ball when you ask just anybody.
Yeah, I think if I can, I don't want to say equate, but if I can compare just in terms of mentality and style of play a little bit, kind of reminds me of Kyle Lowry, so to speak. You know what I mean? That pit bull style of a guard who's going to try and, you know, be a bully down low when he gets a chance, going to try and be quick around you. But that's who his play reminds me of, just a little bit of Kyle Lowry. And, you know, at times it's good and at times it's bad. We've got to see back-to-back games of 8 turnovers under Shamar. Then we got to see, you know, some relatively efficient nights. And we're talking minutes, you know, in the 34s, 35, 36. So he's a guy who was out there a lot. And if people want to say he didn't win that much, I get that, you know. But at the same time, too, somebody's got to be out there on the floor. And if you have somebody who's going to go 110, you know, on the effort meter, that's what you want. So, I'll remember him as kind of like that pit bull guard.
I like it. I like the comparison to Kyle Lowry. That's a good player comp right there. Zid Powell is the last graduate transfer. There's only 5 graduate transfers that UTEP's had since 2014. Zid Powell was somebody this year who averaged 10.9 points. He averaged 4.9 rebounds, was very productive on the glass, 3.1 assists, and then 1.7 steals on under 40% shooting from the field. He was the only player of the guys I listed to shoot under 40% from the field as far as a graduate transfer. And then for Zid Powell this year, he was recruited to be the graduate transfer, the shining player on this team who is going to help lead this UTEP team to success. And I think for Zid Powell, there are those highlight moments. There's the Wyoming game that you can remember, and I think that's how I'm going to remember Zid Powell, helping UTEP finally break the streak, snap the streak, and win the Sun Bowl invitation like they did in late December, Zay. I think that's the game that stands out to me most. He slowed the game down, 32 points, his best at UTEP against that Wyoming team in the championship game of the Westar Don Haskins Sun Bowl Invitational. That's the game that stands out to me most for Zid Powell.
Yeah, definitely for me too. I mean, he's just such a talented player, right? He has, when he's on, right? There's almost nobody in this league that can stop Zid Powell when he is, you know, feeling it.
He gets playing his best,
yeah,
right?
You know, he distributes the ball very well. He gets to the lane very nicely. And, you know, he's a fun player to watch when he's on. And that's how I'll remember him as well.
Yeah, I like that. Hey, special thanks to Chris for saying hi. You stopped by many different times here at the District West. If you're anywhere in the area, if you plan to go out to senior night, come on out and join us. If you've never done it before, come on out and join us. It's family friendly. We've got great food specials, drink specials happening all the way up to the top of the hour. And of course, we're getting you ready for UTEP taking on FIU. So after we're out done here at the district, we'll head out over to the game, and we've got Minor Talk after the broadcast on 600 ESPN El Paso, presented by the Oscar Arieta Agency. So all of that is on deck. Coming up next, we're going to wrap things up talking senior night with UTEP basketball. It's Tay Hardy. He'll be the last player that we profile, and then we'll talk some Locomotive FC at the top of our 6 o'clock hour. Voice of the Miners, John Teicher and Steve Yellen will be standing by around 6:15, and then we will get out to the big game. It's UTEP FIU. All of that is around the corner, and all of that is coming up next as Sports Talk continues here on 600 ESPN El Paso. Live here out at the District West, 3233 North Mesa for our third and final hour. Final 30 minutes out here on Sports Talk. John Berklow joins us here next from the El Paso Locomotive FC assistant coach. He's joined us in the past, and if you know John, you might remember his appearance with us because we've had so many different Locomotive FC personalities join us, but no Locomotive FC personality, whether it be coach or player, had Conference USA ties. So, John, I appreciate you joining us here to start things off. We got a big match coming up Saturday. I can't bury the lead. UTEP beat Liberty on the road this past weekend.
You're
a resident Liberty alumni.
Yeah, I am the resident Liberty alum. You know, I guess UTEP's got to finally win one.
There you go.
So I know women's soccer took it, basketball took it, football took it. So, you know, at some point, you know, can't win them all,
can't win them all. That's right. That's right. All right, that's the only Liberty question I'm going to be asking you today, I promise. El Paso Locomotive FC, they have Hartford Athletic this weekend. Tell me about the buzz around the team, because this is the time where soccer fans get really excited about the season about to kick off. There's so many exciting matches coming up here at home. I mean, I'm looking far ahead to the end of this month. The FC Juarez game is one that I've circled personally on my calendar. But this weekend, I mean, Hartford Athletic, it should be a great one and a chance for the local fans to see this new team.
Yeah, you know, I think every fan we've talked to has really had a sense of excitement about this season. I think the staff and the team ourselves, we all feel that. We all have that same feeling as well, because I think we did a lot of work this offseason and kind of forming this team, and obviously there's been a big amount of turnover. But we're excited with the group we have, and we think we can do some exciting things this year. You know, Hartford's kind of in a little bit of the same boat. New coach, complete turnover in their squad. They've got some dangerous, threatening players up front that we'll, of course, need to make sure we're on top of. It should be a good first game. I think from a neutral standpoint, I imagine it's going to be really exciting because both groups have some, you know, good attacking players that can do things.
So for Locomotive FC, I really like the way that you all have built this roster. We were talking a lot about this over the break. You have some young stars who are trying to rise here in this sport. You have some veteran guys who have played here in the States, even played in Mexico right across the border. You have some guys who have played in the USL and some guys who are returning. So tell us a little bit about this roster makeup here, yeah, and just kind of really making it the roster that you all envision for success here at Locomotive FC.
Yeah, you know, I think whenever we had the opportunity where there was a lot of players out of contract at the end of last year, so we had the opportunity to kind of really make this team our own. And so when we went into the roster construction, you know, I think the first key thing for us was players with USL experience, players that have been successful at this level was going to be big. Because this league has its own unique quirks. It's different, just like every other league is. And so having guys that have been here and done it and know what the league is and been successful doing it was important for us. So, you know, bringing in guys like Bolo Akinyode, bringing in Armando Moreno from New Mexico, Tumi Moshibani and Elijah from San Diego, you know, these are guys that have, you know, around the league are considered top players. So I think that was the initial need, the initial desire was to make sure we had guys with that experience. And then you've got some other guys that we brought in. You know, you've got Tony Alfaro, who's come in, who's got experience in MLS with LA Galaxy, DC United, got experience in Liga MX with Chivas. And so that's a guy with a lot of experience that has played in some big-time games. And so a guy that can come in and has already taken a little bit of a leadership role, along with Bolu Akinyota, who's a new guy who's taken a leadership role. And then you've got kind of those core returners, Liam Rose, Eric Calvillo, guys that have been here now for a few years, know what El Paso is, know what the culture is, know what the club vision for the organization is. And so those guys are really, really important to bring in these new guys. You know, I know Liam had to come back early because he had to have his baby, so he's been here since December, and he was really instrumental with these new guys coming in, helping him get sorted. You know, he actually picked up Bolu's car for him because Bolu wasn't quite here yet, so those little things are really, really important. And then you have the young guys. So you have Diego Abarca, obviously the local guy here. Luis Moreno from Houston, who this will be his second year. Really, really young. You know, hopeful this year that he can maybe have take that step that's needed for him to get a little bit more time. And Diego, you know, he's still looking to make that next step as well. You know, he's gotten on the field for us. He has some ability. But it's hard. I think that's the big thing we're excited about as well as a staff, is it's hard for everybody. We've got a lot of depth this year. And so the competition within the squad is going to be big, is going to be fierce. And so, you know, for us as a staff, it's difficult decisions, but those are the decisions you want to be able to make.
So I want to ask you about Bolu, because he's a really, really awesome player. We had a chance to have him in studio, and his story is remarkable. Now, one of the things that I love about his story is he's like the old guy in the group, but that's a good thing to have more of those veteran leaders. So when you mentioned Calvillo, you mentioned guys like that, I'm thinking to myself, this is an older club in a good way. You have the veteran presence who can kind of guide those younger guys into the right direction.
No, for sure. And it's the right age. You know, we've got guys that are in their prime years, 26, 27, 28, 29.
Right.
They're in their prime years. They're not at the tail ends. So they're the right guys to kind of be around that, you know, they've been in the league for 4 or 5 years. And so they know exactly what it takes to be successful. So when you bring in Tony, who adds experience, but not in this league, they can help him along. And then when you look at the younger guys, you know, those guys that are trying to make their step in, these guys were, you know, at the same place at one point. So their ability to mentor those younger guys and help them figure out, you know, particularly from a mentality standpoint, how do you stay strong when things aren't quite going your way? How do you make that jump? Because the youth to pro game, I mean, that's not a small gap. There's a big gap there, and making that first step across is difficult sometimes. So having these guys that have done it is, you know, really, really important.
Tell me a little more about Diego Abarca, because he's somebody, like you mentioned, fans are really gravitating toward. They love the name. They love what he brings to the table and his potential that he brings to the pitch. Tell us a little bit about him and what you've noticed from him as the season's approaching.
Yeah, so Diego's a guy with a lot of potential, eager, ambitious, and sometimes we've got to tone down that ambitiousness a little bit, but he's just like every player. Players want to play. That's what they want to do. And so Diego, you know, athletically, obviously, is starting to come into his body and understand who he is and what the demands of the league are. So I think from that standpoint, he's at a place now athletically where he can hold his own. Technically, I think he's always been good. His ball striking has always been phenomenal. You know, the first goal he scored for the club was an unbelievable hit. He's always had that in his locker. And so now it's, for him, it's the little bit of that decision-making piece that he's got to grow a little bit, just like every young player does, and trying to figure out, you know, particularly the speed of that decision-making. That's kind of, you know, his big area of growth, all right? But I think he can do things. He can play at this level, and hopefully he can really rise to the occasion in competing with, you know, Tumi Moshabani and Eric Calvillo, guys that are, you know, there's a lot of experience. So if he can kind of learn from them, and, you know, it's a long season, and there's going to be opportunities and moments. So,
yeah, I appreciate that. Hey, we hear our good friends John Teicher and Steve Yellen in our ears. Hey, John and Steve, do you guys mind turning down your volume just a little bit as we continue here with John Berklow? He is assistant coach with Locomotive FC. Appreciate it, you guys, as we continue here on Sports Talk. Now, I got to get your answer, or I got to get your thoughts on the new kits. We talked about a lot of players, but the new kits, the navy blue ones, are fantastic. I always look forward and anticipate every kit release for Locomotive FC, and for these kits, no doubt about it, these are going to be fan favorites, and I'm sure that people have already purchased their kit, and the new jerseys are looking really fresh.
Yeah, the, you know, when we announced the first one, the white one, it's not one that does well by photo, like in person, that's, it's a sharp jersey, and you can really start to see some of the sublimation. And I think, you know, when I was on social media, that was getting a little bit of hate, and I knew in the back of my head, and I was like, all right, guys, just wait. Like, when we launch, when we you know, launch this navy one, everyone's going to be really excited. So really, really beautiful kit. Almost done a great job with that design and partnering with our club to make sure that, the you know, it's not just a jersey that anyone else is wearing. It's something that really fits El Paso and fits the club. So my kids love it. My wife loves it. She's begging, you know, tomorrow. We're going to head to the store tomorrow to make sure we get her one for the game on Saturday. So guys, make sure you go out there and get them, because I think they're going to go off the racks pretty fast.
John, you've been around a lot of soccer in your entire life, football your entire life. You've been around some really good clubs. These colors, the colors of navy blue, baby blue, and yellow, I think it matches perfectly. It meshes perfectly as far as the kit goes.
No, the getting that yellow in there, I think, was really important. You know, I think there's navy blue exists, the baby blue exists. Those are out there in different places, but
sure,
when you can add the yellow accent, I think that really does make it a bit of a differentiator. You know, even on social media, some of the things I've seen, some of the things that people have written, I think they've been excited about that little yellow accent in there. And then you get the chevron in there, both from you know, the Hummel logo, but you also have that in the front center, which kind of looks like, you know, the front, you know, grail or whatever for a locomotive is, it's good. It's sharp.
Let's talk more about the schedule. Hartford Athletic is this Saturday. Next Wednesday, Monterrey Bay FC coming to town, and then Louisville City FC. So if you're a Locomotive FC fan right now who isn't going to be able to go this weekend, next week you're right back at it at home for two exciting matchups.
No, it's a packed schedule to start the year. And obviously great for our fans, great to, you know, potentially build some excitement if we can, you know, get the ball rolling a little bit. Obviously we don't want to get going like last year. It's at the same time, it's also a little bit difficult, right? Like Monterey Bay, their first game will be Wednesday. That'll be our second. Louisville, that'll be their first game. That'll be our third in a week. So it presents some challenges in terms of how we manage the load and keeping guys fresh. But it's also an opportunity to kind of, you know, if we can get going like we think we can really build some excitement and both within the team and with the fans, hopefully get things going to where, you know, we get off and we're 3-0 while everyone else has only played one or two games. So.
Yeah, but I think the disadvantage on that is the fact that the opposing team can now scout you guys, and they've got a little bit of a game plan. So do you guys kind of keep that in mind, say, hey, we're not going to throw out the entire kitchen sink here early on this weekend against Hartford Athletic? We want to save some other tricks up our sleeves.
There's a level that the game model is the game model. That's consistent. It doesn't matter who we're playing. Now there's twists, and you know, and then there's the game strategy that we'll design for each game. That'll have it, you know, based on what the opponent is, based on, you know, who we have starting and what their strengths are. There'll be little twists in each game in terms of the areas that we're trying to exploit, but the game model is the game model. You know, we're not going to deviate from that. We want to make sure that's ingrained in the guys, and, you know, as much as, yes, we have Monterey Bay, they need to adjust to us and adapt to us instead of, you know, us trying to feel like we have to adapt to everyone else.
John, what's your philosophy on non-USL matchups and how you attack those games? Are those the games that maybe you want to throw everybody out there to see how they play against higher-level talent? And I'm alluding to the FC Juarez game that's happening later this month.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, that's an amazing game for the city. It's a game that we're excited about. But in terms of scheduling, again, a little bit difficult, right?
Because
it's another Wednesday game. And so we're going to have to manage bodies. There's no way around it. We're going to have to manage bodies to make sure that guys are staying healthy for the league games, which, you know, ultimately do matter. We want to beat Juarez. You know? I mean, I think we're going to go into any game, no matter what, wanting to win, but we're going to have to make sure we're careful with the guys. But it's also an opportunity to give guys some experience, you know, to give Diego Barca or Luis Molino, Lalita Moreno, or maybe even some guys from the academy, bringing them up and giving them some experience and giving us an opportunity to see them in a high-level game that maybe doesn't have the pressure of, you know, having to have a result. And so it gives us an opportunity to see those guys and how well they can adapt. So that's kind of how we'll be approaching it, is, you know, make sure we keep guys safe, make sure we keep guys healthy. And then, yeah, like, can we give some guys an experience and see how they adapt to it? So
John Berklow with the El Paso Locomotive FC assistant coach as we continue. John, as we wind it up here with us, and I really appreciate all your time here at the District West, I want to simply ask you your message to fans. The first game is this weekend. Locomotive FC fans are chomping for a winner. You have high expectations for this club as well. Now that it's, you guys have been able to get the roster that you all want, the personnel that you want. Give me your, message to the fans as we get ready to kick off this season.
Yeah, I mean, my message to the fans is be loud, be the 12th man for us. You know, they were great last year, even in our difficult run. And hopefully we can give them something to be excited about and get goals on the board. And I think the most important thing is get them a win. You know, we didn't do that nearly enough last year at home. They deserve that because they're amazing. But yeah, get behind us, get loud. You know, we want to make sure that El Paso is a difficult place to come to and somewhere that people, you know, aren't looking forward to. And I think the fans are a big part of that. So we, you know, if you guys are behind us, then I know the boys are going to give everything they can to make sure we bring home 3 points.
John, thank you so much. It's great to see you again, and best of luck Saturday. First game, I can't wait.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thanks.
Awesome. John Berklow joining us here on Sports Talk as we continue. Take a break, wrap it up next with Voice of the Miners, John Teicher and Steve Yellen. That's all coming up here at the District West on 600 ESPN El Paso.